Yeah, man, it's going down. It's Donnie Houston Podcast. I am Donnie Houston. Check it out, man. We got a legend, you know what I'm saying, for a special guest today, man. He's a DJ. He's a producer. You know what I mean? Member of the, you know, the DJ for the Ghetto Boys. You know what I'm saying? DJs for Bun B, man. Produce, you know, a lot of dope-ass Southern records, you know what I'm saying, from Ghetto Boys, David Banner. And one of my favorite David Banner songs, actually. We're going to get into that in a minute. But, hey, man, DJ Damo, man, Domination. What's going down, shit, man?
Cool, man. It's good with you.
I'm glad to have you here, bro, because as DJ and producer, like, these be my favorite guests a lot of times. You know what I'm saying? Because, sure, like, we can really go all up and through that with that nerd shit. Indeed. But what's going down, man?
Man, chill. Try to stay dry, man.
Yeah, that weather crazy.
Stay warm. It's cold and rainy out here.
Yeah. Well, man, what's good? What you got going on? We just, I know you're doing the music at the Trio Show with Bun, right? Well, what's your official position over there? Because they was calling you music director.
I mean, you know, Bun comes up with all kind of names and shit. Like, I mean, really, it started, man, I guess, you know, a couple years ago. He called me, man. He was like, man, I'm thinking about pitching this show to LL. Like, he said, they ain't got nothing on Rock the Bells to really represent the South. You know what I'm saying? So he's like, if they take it, I want you to do the, you know, be the DJ on there. I was like, yeah, let's go. So, long story short, they took it, and we're down there about to be 2 years in on it now.
It's been 2 years already?
Been two. In April, yeah, 2 years.
Damn. And y'all did you go to the Rock the Bells festival and all that?
Yeah.
How was that? Actually, we did that with Face, right?
Yeah, I did it with Face.
Yeah. Talk about that.
Shit, man, we was in Queens, man. Like, and me and Face have never been in New York at all by ourselves. Just me and him.
On some solo shit. Usually
right.
Ghetto Boy
trips.
We did
a Ghetto Boy show there. No Scarface shows. So naturally he's nervous. So like
in Queens or New York in general?
I'm just saying in New York, period. In all of all the five boroughs, we ain't never went and did a Scarface show. No, we did. We did a thing in the park one time.
I'm just tripping on Face not being in New York like that. Right. Like, I would have thought these years, he would have been at least a few times.
Yeah, we never really did no shows in New York, just me and him. You know what I'm saying? Just, it was always Ghetto Boy shit.
Damn.
No, that shit was crazy, man. They had like this, it was like this stadium in the middle of Queens, and I guess it might have been used for tennis or something. I can't think of the name of it, but shit was crazy.
No shit. I saw that and I was like, dog, I will never miss another Rock the Bells. Like, I saw this Rock the Bells and I was like, dog, how did I miss this shit? Like,
yeah, that shit was insane, man.
Yeah.
It was hot. Like, this is the bad part. So we get there and we're supposed to go on like 3-4 o'clock, some shit like that. You know what I'm saying? And being that I've never been there, so I'm sitting on the side of the stage and I'm watching the shadow. Like, this shadow moving this way or is it coming this way? Shadow's going the wrong way. So, bro, like, by the time we got up there, like, it was hot. It was hot, hot.
Yeah.
And he was about to die. Like, I got a picture. Man. I put it on the Instagram. Like, he's looking at me. He's like, man, get me out of here.
How long did y'all do?
Shit, we did shit a hot, maybe 20, 25
oh,
minutes.
Oh, nice little set.
Wasn't much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he came off the stage. He all his clothes off and found it was one AC in the whole backstage area. He found it like
that's what's up. So who all was on the stage with y'all? Like who all was on that bill with y'all?
Man, I mean, LL was on there, motherfucking Fat Joe. The Dipset was on there. There was a lot of people. I can't think of all of them. It was a lot of people though.
Yeah.
Trill Burgers was in the building.
Yeah, for sure. I saw the Trill Burgers.
That motherfucker had a line.
Dog, Bun really going crazy with these burgers right now, dog.
You had one yet?
A few times. Oh yeah. And it's fire. I tell everybody like, nah, make sure do whatever you gotta do now. Be prepared to wait or whatever you gotta do. You know what I'm saying? If you catch a pop up or something, but like, it's worth it, man. Like, burgers amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. He set up a whole a food court out there. Everybody that was like in hip hop.
I saw that. So like Mia X and all them had their stuff.
Mia X was there. One of the locks that got the juice bar, whatever, you know.
Styles P got the juice thing.
Styles P got the juice. Like it was a bunch of dope shit out there.
No shit. That's crazy, man. That's crazy. Does that trip you out? Because you've been around this shit for a long time and you've been able to see it evolve from like guys and people, you know, girls as well. Like you said, me ex was out there. Y'all were doing these rap shows and now you go into the event and it's like, well, shit, we doing rap. We got food. We got, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. You ever thought about dabbling in any other things outside of music or you just kind of like, man, I'm a music dude?
I mean, I'm not really like I'm really like into herbs and shit, man. Like, as of the last 5 or 6 years, like, I really started learning about, like, medicinal herbs and sea moss and shit like
okay.
that. Okay. And I'm like, because, like, at one point in time, I used to be really big. I was, like, almost 300 pounds, you know what I'm saying? And I went through a transformation. I lost, like, over 100 pounds, dude. Like, I went down to, like, 155.
Okay, how'd you lose all that weight? Just through changing your diet and shit?
Yeah, it was straight through that. Like, I pretty much, everything I was doing, I stopped doing cold turkey, man. And I made my mind up to do it and did that shit. Like, and this is like when everybody in Houston, everywhere I wearing 5X t-shirts. This is back when everybody was big, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Late 90s and shit. I think I did that shit around, I don't know, it was about 2000, man. It was about 2000 when I did it. It's been, no, 2010. Let me stop there. It was about 2010. So I was about to turn 40. That's what it was. Like, I was like, man, I'm about to be 40 years old. I'm around this motherfucker in bad shape. I got to do something different. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So yeah, I was like one of the first ones that did it. And then after that, face fell in line. See Slim, everybody, you know what I'm saying? You start seeing everybody just going up in age, just starting to think about that shit. And get, you know, try to make moves to get healthy, you know what I'm saying? And
now, so, I'm on that. I'm on a quest right now to try to, like, lose more weight, you know what I'm saying? What is the, would you replace shit with certain shit? Like, how did you get to that point?
Man, I'm gonna tell you like this, man.
Because I'm a big bad eating motherfucker, you know what I'm saying?
Like, bro, I'm gonna tell you like this. I used to drink like a gallon of milk a day, 12 pack of sodas, cookies, like, yeah, just shit, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. You feeding yourself shit all day, you're gonna turn into shit, turn into a pile of shit too, you know what I'm saying? But now, basically what it was, man, my initial, when I started, I was like, man, I'm going to go to the gym, and I'm going to keep eating what I want, I'm going to get in shape. Only thing that happened, I had better wind, I ain't losing no weight, none of that shit, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I made the decision. My homeboy Corbin was a trainer at the gym, so I had somebody I could call. So I was like, man, I'm stopping this shit right now. What I need to do? So every time I got ready to eat, I would just call him, like, can I eat this? He's like, no. So, in the end, I just ended up finding a few things that I liked and ate that shit over and over again. Something that was good, you know what I'm saying? At that time, I was eating a lot of, like, tilapia and shit like that. But that, now I understand differently.
That shit is crap. That ain't where you want
to
go, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? My evolution of learning about, like, what's good and what's not has been a long journey. So, a lot of stuff that I was eating at that moment probably wasn't the best thing, but it was helping me get to where I needed to be.
Yeah.
It got me to where I needed to be, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, I totally went through that and did that.
Hmm.
And lots of people asked, you know what I'm saying? Like, man, you should sell people. And I was like, man, the information is free, it's real easy, because it's all in a decision, man. Every time you go to eat something, you got a decision with this or that, you know what I'm saying? And the problem is that in your mind, I know for me, it was like, if I'm hungry, I need a chicken fried steak, something like that, you know what I'm saying? And then once I made the change and started making the decision to not do that over and over enough, my habits changed, my cravings changed, and eventually the stuff that I was eating that was good for me, I started craving that. And when I would see the other shit that I used to like, I would turn my nose up to it. Like, I don't want that ain't, you know what I'm saying? It ain't gonna. And everything changed. So you have to give yourself time for your habits to change, really. And it's hard. It's going to be hard if people try to, you know, say they're going to cut back and wean down. Like, you still got that dope in your hand, you know.
The reality is you've been living your life at this point, I'm in my 30s, 30 plus years, a certain type of way.
Right.
You got to unprogram all them years.
Right. You got to, and that's the thing, man. We all learn how to eat from our families. So when you see people talking about, well, I'm big because my family's big and it's just in our genes, like, that's not true. Y'all just eat the same.
Y'all just develop the same habits.
Y'all got the same habits, you know what I'm saying? So once you break those habits, you break a lot of shit, you know what I'm saying? The blood pressures and all that shit go away. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a lot of things you can fix on your own. Like, the doctors ain't there to cure you, bro. They're not there to fix you. They're there to give you Band-Aids for your symptoms. And that's it.
Yeah, I feel that. But yeah, man, let's talk about some music, man. All that shit, you know.
All that food shit.
Man, tell me, okay, so before Ghetto Boys and all that, you were just telling me earlier you were from LaPorte.
Yeah, I'm from LaPorte.
So how did you start getting into music before you linked up with them, you know?
I mean, so I started DJing in 83. This the summer between 6th and 7th grade. So you think about a kid that young, like my girl got a kid in 7th grade, and I'm like, I can't picture him being that, you know what I'm saying? But it was, music is something that was always in my family, you know what I'm saying? Like my grandmother played everything, keyboards, guitars, uncles played drums, like it was just come from a musical family. So naturally, I was always into it. Even before I started DJing, I had records, you know what I'm saying? And I guess at some point that summer between 6th and 7th grade there, I think that's the summer Run DMC came out. And
yeah, 83, you right there. Yeah.
It was something about that sound. And I'm not sure exactly how I started DJing. All my partners say we seen him on TV or something. But I know it was because of Jam Master Jay that I did it, you know what I'm saying? So I got into that and I just started doing it. And from the first day, I was good at it. And I, you know what I'm saying? And I'm there with, I didn't even have no equipment. Like my little sister had this little, a suitcase turntable, you know what I'm saying? That opened up and I took a record and I just grabbed a needle. I ain't move the record. I grabbed a whole needle and like just scratched the shit out of the record. And then we would have like a beat playing on this cassette deck and recorded on this one. And everybody got to be quiet so you don't hear it. You know what I'm saying? Recorded through the air. And like, it just started at that. And then eventually you work your way up to the turntable. Like we got a mixer. Like I ended up getting, it had to be for the 7th grade year, maybe 7th or 8th grade. I can't remember, but me and my crew was like, we want to be in a talent show. This shit is funny. It's like, we're going to be in a talent show at the school.
So it was you DJing and your friends rapping, or everybody was kind of DJing?
No, they were breakdancing. Yeah, there wasn't no rapping and shit. Like, they was breakers and DJs and shit. So my mom was like, well, yeah, if you'll be in a talent show, I'll get you the mixer. So we go to Radio Shack, and like the cheapest one they got, realistic mixer.
The realistic.
It ain't even the one with the crossfader. It's the up and downs. Yeah. You can put your shit run off of batteries, you know what I'm saying? Like, but we got it, you know what I'm saying? And I got like a rack mount stereo system for Christmas, like a 25 watt Magnavox, you know what I'm saying? I was like, we're gonna take this in the gym. I don't know nothing about sound. So we go in there with that. My other partner Jason, he's one of the dudes breaking. He got two other speakers. So we just run the wires. We got four house speakers sitting in a big ass gym. Yeah. And yeah, we went out there.
Did the sound work? Because the first time I did that, I saw some shit I thought would work. I needed to do a bigger party.
That shit was horrible, bro.
See, my shit, this is...
Nobody could hear nothing. Like, and one of the little guys...
It had the little muffle sound and shit?
You had an amp on that muffle? What you could hear. Like, when somebody came out and kicked the speaker wire when we first started. But it wasn't even that. Like, the people went crazy. You couldn't hear the music, but the people went crazy.
Yeah. Just the sight of y'all.
Yeah, just the sight of it. Like, they loved it, you know what I'm saying? But I was like, we didn't know. I didn't know no better. Like, so, yeah, we, you know, moved from there. And eventually, like, through you get to high school. Then you start, you know what I'm saying, by now... I got two turntables. They're not Techniques and they don't match, you know what I'm saying? But I got ones that I can cut up on, you know what I'm saying? So that's what we're doing. And we,
did you able, other than seeing it on TV, was there anybody around you like that you could see like firsthand that was DJing? It's really just whatever.
At that age, no. Like at that age, no, man. It would be more like cassettes, you know what I'm saying? Just, you know, seeing shit, videos or something somebody might
have. So listen, watching and just emulating yourself.
Right, just trying to, yeah. Like I said, I didn't even know to move the record. I grabbed the whole fucking needle and just scratched that shit. You know what I'm saying? So it was more of that. And then eventually, you know what I'm saying, you start learning more. So then we got equipment. In high school, we started doing parties and shit. And a good friend of mine from Baytown named Romany Malco. He's like a famous actor, and I don't know if you know, have heard of him.
Romany, he played fucking MC Hammer.
Right, he played.
No
Hammer.
Shit, that was that's like your boy.
We used to do parties and shit back in LaPorte.
Cause he used to rap.
Right,
I've seen him rap.
Right,
like, in interviews.
So back in high school, they was from Baytown. I was from LaPorte, and I don't know how we ended up linking up. Like I don't know how we found people back then without the shit that we have now. But yeah, we ended up linking up. We're doing parties and shit, and yeah, it's tons of fun, you know what I'm saying?
Bro, you blowing my mind right now. So, I forgot he was even from around here. But
so yeah, they had a group back then called RMG, Regis Malco Guidry. That's their all last names and shit. So after they were like a couple years older than me, So they graduated high school in Baytown. They all went to L.A. So I'm here. So he goes to L.A. He ends up, they do the College Boys. You heard, they got a deal with Virgin, changed their name to the College Boys, did that. He ended up doing the, remember Paula Abdul had that cartoon cat?
Mm-hmm.
He was the cat for that. Like, Rhyme's done a bunch of shit.
Hmm. And y'all were in contact this whole time while he's going through all that shit?
I mean, we talk. With, no, not really like that. You know what I'm saying?
He went out to L.A. and he just went out.
Yeah, they went away and, mm-hmm. and that was that. You know what I'm saying? So now, it's like I get out of school and, you know, I already know this is all I'm going to do. So, and kind of how I got to the Ghetto Boys, like in school, there was a chick, a homegirl of mine named Sherry Bell. And she was talking to this dude named Charles Bush. And Charles had a teen club in the mall in Baytown. So she told him, like, man, we got this dude out here, woo, woo, woo. He ended up bringing me over to the club over there. So my partner Wiz from North Shore, like, me and Wiz, we always DJ together and shit. So me and Wiz go do that. Shit, where I'm going? We do that, get out of school, like,
Is the mall, is that how you connect with the Ghetto Boys?
No, well, it's going to come back around. So it's going to come back around to that. Eventually, long story short, I went to L.A. for a while with my homeboy TNT.
What TNT do?
So, well, TNT and, you know, Candyman is?
Hell yeah, Knocking the Boots.
So TNT and Candyman used to be dancers for Tone Loc.
That's why Tone Loc was at the front of the Candyman record. Attention, all late.
Right. So Candyman. TNT and Candyman used to be dancing for Tone Loc. And they was TNT and Candyman was on the same label before he caught that deal with the Knock in the Boots. I was going out there to be TNT's DJ, more or less. He was about to work on an album. And so I'm living in South Central with him. Their producer is Johnny J. The one that Death produced Earl. All Pac yeah. shit. Like, so Johnny J is like one of the first dudes I linked up with that was a producer, you know what I'm saying? And I didn't even make beats back then.
It's crazy you said this, because just the other day I was listening to Candyman and I just went down a rabbit hole of just like looking him up and mm-hmm. shit. And then I saw his connection to Johnny J and that tripped me out. So you yeah. were fucking with them.
Yeah, Fela Al. Like, Fela Al was like kind of over their thing. But yeah, Johnny J was my boy, man. Like,
no shit.
You know, and then I'm out there fucking with them and...
So what you doing while they having this success with what they got going on? Or the Candyman thing hadn't kicked off. He was still TNT.
Well, no, Candyman shit had popped off already. And he kind of, you know, was moving his own direction. That's when TNT was finna make his album. You know what I'm saying? Well, while I'm there living with him, his mom ends up dying. So that changed like everything. I ended up coming back here. And
did that affect his career? Or did he?
Yeah, I would say so, because he never... Like, whatever he was trying to do at that moment never ended up coming to pass, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, he was dope and shit. So I ended up coming back to Houston. I linked up with K Reno and Dopey when they were COD. I kind of was messing with them at that time.
Hmm.
After that, I was fucking with Ricky Royal and Royal Flush. I was doing shit with them. And then
and you just meeting these people just out here just trying to figure it out.
I don't remember. Yeah, I don't, like, that's what I said. I don't remember how everything came together. I guess it's just the manifestation of what you want to do. Like, and so when I met Face and them, first time I met Face and them, my partner Wiz had got us a job DJing at Club Amnesia off of 290 and Antoine. And this is when the Ghetto Boys, as you know them now, that's when they first got together around this time and put the Grip It On The Other Level out. So they would always come to the club there. They was always at Amnesia, and Face being a DJ, he was always up in the DJ booth. So me and Face became friends there. Like, him and Bushwick used to have an apartment. I would go, you know, hang out with them, pick them up, kick it, you know what I'm saying? Ready Red was my boy. Like, I knew all of them and shit, but that's what we did. So that... After that club, this wasn't gonna come back. So I got a call from Charles Bush, same guy that had the club, the teen club in Baytown. He had Club Infinity, on the south side over off of Griggs. He's like, man, I want you to come in here. So he already had Steve Fournier in there. Resin Effect was in there.
Oh, man.
So
we dropping some names, dog. This is like.
We ended up being live on. Me and Resin Effect was in the club. We hooked four turntables up, and we're live on the radio.
No shit.
Live on the radio. Jams? Like, yeah, that shit was. That shit was dope, man. Shit. And everybody used to come through there. All the Houston rappers at that time, everybody was through there. So when the Mind Playing Tricks record came out, that was the first place they brought it to. They brought it up there. We played it on the radio. Test press, you know what I'm saying?
From the club.
Yeah, live from the club.
Damn.
So yeah, we're in there. They always used to come through. Well, Bushwick was there one night, and Bill gets out of hand when he drinks. So he's at a point to where he's like going behind the bar. He's making his own drinks, doing too much. They end up putting him out the club. You know what I'm saying? So
the Bushwick Bill stories are always amazing. Oh, like, you man. Just said that, and I'm just thinking in my head, how you walk behind a bar and make your own drink?
Man,
like,
hey, man. I got a million.
I don't even know nobody even think to even do that shit.
Stories about Bill, man.
We'll get into those, but yeah. Yeah,
yeah, so the next morning, Wiz calls me. He's like, man, I heard Bill got shot. I'm like, no shit. We're going to the hospital. So we went up to the hospital that day. Like, all the Jay, everybody's up there. You know what I'm saying? We go to check on Bill.
This is the day after you see him behind the bar. He's getting fucked up. You watching
out. Right. This the day they shot the album cover when he was in the hospital. Like,
but the night before is when you saw him in the bar with the.
Right. Yeah, he was up there fucking with me at the club that night, for sure.
Okay.
And then all that shit happened. So then they go up there. And at this point, I remember that happened, but this is like when Reddy Red quit the group, kind of at that moment in that time frame. And I mean, yeah, I probably hide the face, like, man, you know, if y'all need somebody, let me know, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And went on about my business and shit. And then I'm in the Galleria one day, and Face's uncle Shine worked at one of the shoe stores in the mall. So I'm in there looking around. He's like, man, I just got out of work. Can you take me home and shit? So I take him back over to South Acres to his mama house, and Face is over there. And he's like, man, we're getting ready to go on the road. Won't you come fuck with us? All right, what we need to do? He's like, meet me over at Beto's crib. Beto lived over off of like Belford and Fondren at the time. And
this is where he had the studio and all that type of shit. I hear about Beto having some apartment.
Apartment. Yeah, he had equipment. I mean, back then, you're talking about having a studio, basically having an ASR-10 and some speakers in the house. You know what I'm saying? That was a studio and a record player or some shit. So, but yeah, so go to Beto's crib, and Jay's over there. Chief is over there. All three of them are over there, and they got Marcus Love over there. Marcus Love was one of the DJs from Kids Jam back in the day, you know what I'm saying, my partner. But they got two turntables and two copies of the record, and they're like, this is the show. Like, Jay made the show up, and he's going through it with them. So I'm just kind of sitting there watching this shit, and like, you know, he go through it, Marcus fuck up a little bit, fuck up this.
Are y'all record. Supposed to be going against each other to see who gets the spot, or y'all just?
In essence, that's what it ended up being, but like, that's not, I didn't go over there, you know what I'm saying, expecting that. I didn't know what it was, you know what I'm saying? I just went over there. I was like, shit. So he went through the show, and then they was like, well, let Domination try it. So I run through that bitch, 1, 2, 3, just back to back. Like, it wasn't no hard shit to do. I run through the motherfucker, and they're like, all right, so cheat.
How long was the sets at that time, like back then?
I mean, they had what? They had one out, two albums.
Couple songs,
yeah. It wasn't much. Like, it wasn't a whole lot. But so, anyway, when it's all said and done, Chief was like, he's like, all right, Damo, we're gonna take Marcus Love with us, and then we're gonna rotate you in. And they was all like, hell no, like, he going with us now, and that's it. Like,
this is what the group is saying.
Yeah, that's what Willie, Bill, and Face. They like, nah, ain't no rotation. Domination going with us. That's our dude from now on. You know what I'm saying? So, that's what it was.
Man, okay, so where some of the first spots y'all going out?
I mean, shit, the very first show I did with him, I don't know where the fuck we was at, but it was in a barn, bro. Yeah, it was out here somewhere. outside of, you know, outside of Houston here somewhere, but the shit was in a fucking horse barn.
Is this because we talk about, like, back in the day, like, hip-hop still being very fresh and, like, just finding places to even get your shit off, you know what I'm saying? Was it that type of thing? Like,
no, I don't think so, because there were plenty of other places that that was
y'all just ended up in this barn.
That was that was something else. I don't know what that was, but the convicts was there. Like, a lot of people I've rapped like,
this is a legit show.
Yeah, that shit was dope. Like, whatever it was dope. Like, Jay pulled out all them gangster cars he had, and we rode up in them motherfuckers. And
no shit. Yeah, okay. Okay. Tell me about this. How did y'all? Because you're talking about the cars now. Like, can you tell me how it used to be when y'all were, you know, that early Rap-A-Lot era? You know what I'm saying? Like, moving like that and shit.
I mean, shit. Man, you gotta understand. I grew up in LaPorte. You know what I'm saying? I come into a situation unlike anything I've ever been around. You know what I'm saying? So I can't do nothing but just look and listen. You know what I'm saying? Learn how to move. You know what I'm saying? Just move differently and just keep your eyes open and watch what you're doing. Like, shit was way different back then.
Hmm.
So, you know, but yeah, it was all love.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Man, okay, so tell me about what y'all did at Yo MTV Raps.
The Yo MTV Raps.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, hell yeah. So that was in 91, and this is the Source Awards. This is the first annual Source Awards, and Ghetto Boys won Single of the Year that year. And that was part of us going to Yo MTV Raps with something to do with that. And
that was like part of like the prize type shit?
There was no prize. Like,
but I mean, that just came up to success. Now you got this notoriety of getting this record.
Like, any show you have now, you're going to have the hottest, group on there. Right. That's what they were at the time. Right.
That solidified y'all. So now, okay, now we're going to Yo MTV. Gotcha.
Yeah, and like, and also like at that same time, like we talking about that first show in the barn, but immediately after that, we go on the Public Enemy tour. My very first tour is Public Enemy, Ghetto Boys, MC Light is on there, Naughty by Nature, Queen Latifah, Leaders of the New School, Ice-T was on some of them shows. Like, who else, man? I'm leaving somebody out. I think Tribe was on some of them. Yeah, Tribe was on some of them shows, because I fuck with Q-Tip. Like, yeah.
No, bro, this shit just, you got to understand, bro. I grew up listening and watching all this shit, dog. This shit just sounds like a fucking dream. Are you tripping?
It was like, bro, you have no idea. Like, this is all I've ever wanted to do, like, as a kid. Like, you know what I'm saying? You got to think for me, I can't say when hip-hop started, because I was, like, way young then. But, yeah, at this point in time, like, that's all I do. That's all I've ever done. Like, I've never really had jobs and shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what I've done my whole life and continue to do. And, like, that's the blessing of it. Like, I never would have thought I'd be 51 years old still doing this shit. You know what I'm saying? It's been a blessing, man, to still be here and watch, like, and see all this crazy shit going on around here.
Yeah. Is there anything that stands out from that tour? Because you're talking about Public Enemy, which means you got Flavor Flav, you got Bushwick Bill. There's some characters on here. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, that shit was crazy. And this the funny part. I'm going to tell you, this is some funny-ass shit. So, I don't know if you've ever seen a Public Enemy concert back then, but, like, their stage is, like, they got all this shit going on. They got risers and platforms and big-ass backdrops. Everybody got that shit. And we're like, going on right before Public Enemy. And we hit the stage, we got a motherfucking backdrop smaller than this wall. Like, it's, it's half the size of this wall big. In the Summit, you know what I'm saying? We're in the Madison Square Garden with a banquet table set up, put the turntables on that shit, and this little bitty ass backdrop up here.
Wow.
That shit was funny.
Damn. But, I mean, shit, y'all was, I mean, yeah, shit, it was, like, it was so it early, done. Like, you know.
Yeah, like, we, you know what I'm saying? Where do you go get that kind of shit done at? We didn't know. Chief had somebody painted, like, whoever.
Hey, get up, boy, need sign.
Whoever was doing the backdrops in the club, Chief was like, man, make us a backdrop. So he painted that motherfucker. Like, somebody still got it. I need to find that shit.
That's crazy. That'd be cool to
that
see.
That shit was funny, man.
So, okay, so yeah, I do this too. So when do you start, how early do you start, like, really getting into production? You know what I'm saying? Like, putting guys on the records and shit.
I started making beats, man, probably. I probably made maybe 95, 96.
Oh, a little bit later on. Yeah,
it was later. Like, I was, you know what I'm saying? I was always interested in shit, but I never had any equipment for one. And then, you know, man, you know what? It was a little bit before that, man. When did Until Death Do Us Part come out?
93.
It was around 93. Because I remember when Joe first came, like, N.O. Joe. So this is what it was. When Ready Red was there, Red produced, like, a lot of the records and shit, right? And Beto. Red left, and now it's like, pretty much on Beto, whoever else was around. Then Mike Dean showed up. And when Mike came, like, he brought a whole nother level to the shit. And then they found Joe.
Well, Crazy C was over there, too, at that time,
yeah,
too.
Crazy C was around, too. Yeah, for sure. Crazy C, yeah. And, but yeah, so Joe came around. Joe brought that MPC back. Because everything was, like, being done on ASR-10s and shit up to that point.
Well, people out here using an SP-1200 back then? Or is that more like some East
Coast
shit?
Some people were. Like, I know Ready Red used one. I know Royal Flush and them had, they used to fuck with the SP-1200. Wiz had one. I'm sure there were others. I wasn't making a lot of beats, but when Joe came, we had actually they had bought an apartment over in Greenhouse Patio, and I was living in that motherfucker. And
you say they? What you mean?
Like Jay? Like
oh, the label?
Yeah, like Dalia. Yeah. It was like, you know what I'm saying?
Just the spot they had. Yeah.
That's the spot. Like I'm staying in the spot. The homeboy Popeye, he was living in there, and this is like when they first found, I think Face found Joe in New Orleans or something, but Joe came down here. So Joe's in there and like, he's like one of the first ones I'm really watching work on that MPC, you know what I'm saying? I think it was an MPC 60 at the time.
Gotta be a 60, yeah.
So yeah, Joe and then of course with Mike Dean, like yeah, so eventually I get into making beats and you know, trying to do that shit. And I think the first record, matter of fact, it is the very first record I did. Face called me one day. He's like, man, go over to the studio with Devin and Smith, go make some records and shit. And
they're working on Face Mob.
The first Face Mob record, yep. And I did the Other Side of the Law that day. And that ended up being like the first single and the name of the album and shit. I was like, all right.
And this is you had already been making beats, or this is
well, I'd been making beats, but I hadn't
put nothing.
I hadn't really got the formula to that shit yet. You know what I'm saying? Like you go back and listen to that shit, it's like, all right.
So what were you using at that time?
Probably an ASR or an EPS. I don't know what EPS or ASR.
Man, okay, that's what's up. Okay. Are there any studio sessions that stand out in your mind where you like, man, I never figured I was a studio and this shit happened?
I mean, there's lots of that shit, man. Lots of studio, like, I think probably the livest one, though, was when they recorded Smile, man, when we was at Death Row Studios with Pac.
So they did that together?
Yeah, we was in L.A. I think we was working on the Untouchable album. So with Face, like, when he works on his albums, he pretty much, he ain't the kind that would sit around and make songs, and then go to the studio and mix. I'm like, we go to the big studio and we making the song that day.
Oh, top scratch. To bottom. Yeah.
Yeah, from scratch. We finna make everything today. And that's what we would do. We would go to LA and spend months out there, had apartments and shit. And one day Pac came through there with the Hummer, with the PA system on top. Talking about Scarface, come out with your hands up. He's riding through there, so we look out, we're like, shit, that's Pac. So we all end up going to Death Row that day.
Oh, he was just coming down to fuck with him.
Yeah, he was just coming to fuck with Face and shit. We ended up going to the studio, and yeah, that's what they did the Smile record that day.
Just on the whim.
On the whim. That's actually the same day. If you heard on My Homies, you ever seen the My Homies video at the end where he's like freestyling? Mm-hmm. That's from that session right there. Face's cousin Jamal, rest in peace, Jamal. Jamal Fennel, like, Pac was his favorite artist. I used to hate to listen to Pac because all the fuck he played. Like, he played nothing but Pac, Jamal, man. And so he filmed that, and he actually, Pac said he would just write a whole bunch of shit. Like, Face is meticulous. He takes his time. Pac's just writing shit. So Jamal ended up grabbing one of Pac's, one of the songs he had. It was called, like, Snow in Africa or some shit. And, man, this motherfucker had this shit folded up in his wallet forever until it just disintegrated.
Oh, he stole his rhyme.
Yeah, he had like the paper that he wrote it on. Like he had Pac's lyrics, like handwritten Pac song. And yeah, I was like, bro, once you frame that shit or do something with it, he's carrying it around in his pocket, like
showing motherfuckers
the
shit.
So it just disintegrated. Yeah, you know how she leave it in your pocket, yeah. Like it's done.
It ain't nothing but dust. Yeah.
So yeah, that shit happened.
No shit. So okay, so the whole time they doing this, Face is working on it, but Pac just writing records, and they making the beat. All this shit talked about.
Yeah, well, that ain't even the same beat. Like it was, the song was laid on a different beat. They Tone Capone and Face and Mike Dean came back and did the Smile. I think that's everybody that was on there.
So it didn't have a hook Smile. That came afterwards.
That came afterwards, yeah. Gotcha.
No shit. Okay, who else you been in like that's like iconic like that? Like Pac and shit and like who else that's not around from here of Texas, you know what I mean?
I mean, shit, I've been in the studio with Dre, with Face before, with Jay-Z.
Okay, how did the Dre thing go? Because I hear Dre is like just crazy in the lab.
Yeah, I forgot what song he was. What song was this? This is around the time that he did the Aftermath album, like his first album after leaving fucking with Easy and them. I can't remember the song. This was dope about Dre's studio session. Like you go in there, and he's got a lounge room full of musicians, just chilling. Like so, if he says, "Hey, I need a flute player," like it's one in there. I need this or that, he's in there like, I thought that was dope, you know what I'm saying? Like, just to have that.
So everybody just waiting on their number to be called.
Waiting on the word, like, yeah, he's in there creating, like, and they, I know that motherfucking, I forgot, what studios we had, I can't remember the name, that shit was loud as fucking.
That's what I was about to say, I heard Dre, like, studio shit just be ridiculously loud, you know what I mean?
That shit, it's like this, you know how silent a room, if you build a room correctly, that room is almost hard to sit in. It's so quiet, you know what I'm saying? Because I guess essentially in a studio, what you want to create is the sound to pass you one time and die. You don't want no reflections, no reverbs, and nothing. So there would be a song and like that shit could be loud as fuck and it'd just be like womp and then dead silence, you know what I'm saying? And like the room was that tight. So yeah, it was. That shit was dope.
No shit. Okay, you said Drake. Jay-Z. Talk about it. What was it Jay-Z? Was it Can't Be Life? That session?
No, this is this was for
Talk to me, man.
Nah, this is a song on Face album. They're kind of going back and forth on it. I think it's Get the Fuck Out the House. I can't even think of the name of that song, but yeah, maybe on Last of a Dying Breed or some shit. I can't remember.
This was out here, this was in New York?
No, we was in L.A. Same studio in Burbank at the Enterprise. And Jay's dope, so they got two mics set up, you know what I'm saying? And Jay didn't write shit, like Face would be sitting there and like they were like going back and forth with their rhymes, you know what I'm saying? So like Face would write his line, and then they got both mics set up, he would spit it, and as soon as Face would finish his line, Jay would spit his shit. Face would go back and write his shit. Say it. Jay would spit it right after. Like, he ain't take no time with it.
Damn.
I've heard he's like that. I heard he don't like write shit. He just go in there and says it. Like,
I heard him about not writing, but to be that prepared. Yeah, like,
no, to be able to do that and say the things that you say. Yeah. You think about people that freestyle and they looking around the room talking about the wall and what you got on and that kind of shit, to say some really meaningful shit.
Yeah,
and you're not taking no time to write it down. Like, he says some shit, bro. Like,
yeah, I mean, shit. He wanted to call, who's the best rapper to you all the time? Who would you say?
Shit, he's up there. He's up there for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. Face is too. Like, it ain't definitely again. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's not so much how you do it; it's how it ends up. Mm-hmm. What do you end up putting out? What are you saying?
Yeah.
Both of them got a whole lot to say for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Talk about Bushwick Bill, man. Some of the Bushwick Bill, the Bushwick Bill times, man.
Just funny. All right, this is funny. For my first time in New York. My first time in New York. That's when we go on that tour, the Public Enemy tour. We're playing Madison Square Garden, and we get there, and Bill's like, "Come, let's go to my mom's house in Bushwick," and we're like in Times Square area. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, all right, come on, let's go. So Bill's standing out there trying to flag down a cab. They're like, they keep flying by him. I'm like, damn. I like, go stand behind the pole, Bill. So I go out there, I catch the cab. As soon as they stop, I was like, come on. They look at Bill, they're like, fuck. And we tell them where they're going, where we gotta go. They're like, fuck, like double fuck, you know what I'm saying? So we go to Bill's mom's house and shit. They got baby pictures of Bill on the wall and shit. And we kick it or whatever. So when it comes time to leave, ain't no yellow cabs coming out there. So we gotta catch like one of these neighborhood ride cabs, Cadillac cab or some shit, you know what I'm saying? So it's late night, we're riding through motherfucking Brooklyn. We stop somewhere and then all of a sudden this dude runs out of, from nowhere. He got a box in his hand. He's looking, you know what I'm saying? Bill's like, yo, stop, roll the window down, talk to the dude. So dude got a box, a camcorder, and it's got the plastic on the outside of the box and the papers are inside the plastic on the outside of the box. So Bill takes the box, he's shaking it. I'm like, man, I don't buy that shit, Bill. He's like, nah, it's real.
In the middle of the night. Just
in the middle of the night. So Bill gives the dude some money. Bill opens the box. He ain't pulling out nothing but toilet paper and rocks out the motherfucker. He was like, I knew it wasn't real. I just wanted to give him the money. I was like, bro, you could have slid that to me. Like,
was Bill really that? Was he that type of person? Kind of just on some, like, we felt like, you know.
Man, I'm gonna tell you in the later days, man. Wherever we would do a Ghetto Boy show at last, that's where Bill lived.
No shit.
He would stay in that town. Like, Bill's the kind, like, he would find people, move in with him. Like, he didn't give a damn. Like, hey, I'm telling you, Bill didn't give a damn.
Wait, what?
Bill would stay, like, he stayed, like, he would just stay there. Like, Bill was, hey, when you talking about a Rolling Stone, like, that was Chuck, man. Like,
wherever the last date was.
Like, he would stay, like, I mean, we did a show in Detroit. We did a show in Detroit, like, at the Shane Theater, like on the water out there, like these hotels we stayed at right there. Man, the promoter called like weeks later, like Bill's still in the hotel. He won't leave. He won't leave, like
he's y'all ever asked him about this shit? Like, Bill, why you y'all just Bill, he's just, man, doing Bill.
Hey.
You just roll with it.
Hey man, you just roll with it, like They were a motherfucker to deal with, you know what I'm saying?
That's what I mean. It's just y'all like together. Four eyeballs. It's like you know, you come in here, you know what I mean? You're the white guy DJ. You got the Bill on his shit.
I'm the one
you got a Willie hella aggressive face on whatever. You know what I mean? Like, that's crazy as hell.
Yeah, for me, like so in the beginning, it was like it was easy. Like we would like put shows together. We come to the end. I can't get them all three in the same room at the same time. You know what I'm saying? So it's all the way up until the show is about to start. Like, you know what I'm saying? What we gonna do? Like, how we gonna, you know what I'm saying? And we kind of always end up freestyling shit, and it always came out dope. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
So you couldn't get it because, I mean, the Ghetto Boys essentially, like, they were just kind of put together. They weren't necessarily
a crew
that came in and got signed to a label.
They were three people from three different parts of the world and thrown into the same room and told to make records, you know what I'm saying? Like, and that's what they did.
And so they really, it was just always just kind of three different guys. Just yeah. Everybody did their own thing.
Totally was. Still is.
No shit. Man, okay, so talk to me about Devin, man. Because, you know, you and Devin got some records, man.
Yeah, well, so I met when Devin and first came to rap a lot, when the Odd Squad first came, we clicked, like that became kind of like my crew, you know what I'm saying? Because they kind of was more into the kind of shit, you know, that I did on just a daily basis, you know what I'm saying? I never really, you know, I didn't go hang around with Face a lot, you know, in the later years and shit. But yeah, like, so we always used to kick it with them. I actually, when they was working on their Odd Squad, I actually ended up doing the cuts on that record. I did that, and then we ended up having studios together forever. Me and Rob and Dev always kept a studio somewhere to work at, you know what I'm saying? And I learned a lot of shit from Rob. Rob's like another one of the first people I seen make beats.
Genius, bro.
Like, Rob was insane. Like, first time I seen Rob work, Jug Mug had an apartment. And under the stairwell, there was like, you know, you put like shit, like the storage closet under the stairs. Like, Rob had the keyboard under there in the dark. You know what I'm saying? He's hitting the buttons. He's like, does it say this? I'm like, yeah. To say this? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, how's this motherfucker, you know what I'm saying? He just remembers like five clicks left, up two times, over, down. This is what it says. And yeah, he knew how to work that shit. So
that's,
I learned how to use ASR probably a lot from watching him.
So when you, okay, what's the rec, cause you do, you know, when Devin goes solo, you know what I mean? With the Dude album and all that, like, did you produce the song, The Dude?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Dude, I think me and Face did that one. I got like 14 to 15 songs.
A few joints on that first, yeah, on that first one.
But yeah, when we first did that, like, it was basically like I would go pick up Dev every morning. Like, that's another thing. Like, a lot of people, they always worked at night. Everybody on Rap a lot was night workers. Face, Jay, everybody came out at night. You know what I'm saying? But like me and Dev, we get up early in the morning. We had kids and shit. So 9 o'clock in the morning, we're taking care of the kids. I'm coming to pick Dev up. We're going to the studio. And like, we're just in there all day, from day to night. And just every day, that's what we did until we had the record done.
Oh, shit. Yeah. So, man, that's dope as fuck. Did it trip you out? Because I heard Devin didn't really want to do solo. I think I read that somewhere. Like, he,
I don't think he did. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's always been kind of a group type of person. Like, he always, you know, even shit, just I went to a Dev concert out at Scout Bar probably earlier in the year, and this is the first time I ever seen Dev on stage by himself, because he always just keep everybody with him, you know what I'm saying? Anybody who was down with him, who might have a song on his record or verse, like, come on, come do it, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, I don't think he really wanted to do the solo album in the beginning, but once he did,
it was all
worth it, I think. Sure.
Yeah. No, for sure. Is there anything that stands out from like the Devin sessions and all that?
No, you couldn't really see nothing.
Smoking. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Dev's hella creative, man. Like, it's funny, I was listening to the interview you did with Devin here and how it started. He was talking, and you started recording some shit before even the intro. Like, you was like, he's saying some shit, start recording it, right?
Yeah.
So we had, you familiar with the song Zeldar?
Yeah, Zeldar, yeah.
The alien.
Yeah, yeah.
So we we go to the studio, we're at the Hippie House, and I got the beat track that we're recording on D88 tape. So you recorded 5-6 minutes, that's what it is. So I was pulling the beat up, playing it, he was in there checking the mic, and whoever was in the studio the night before, they left some kind of effect on the mic. So he started doing that alien shit, and like, he had been doing it for a while, but I was like, that's dope. I started recording it. And then like, he did the whole thing, and then at the end, when he's like, my name is Zellar, and then the beat ended, I was like, dude, that's it, come in here.
Get
like,
the fuck out of here.
It was an accident. It was a total accident, and like, we basically went back, we had that, and then we had to like pull the tape back a little bit, and then he did all the welcome, you know, he did the little intro part and made it, we actually timed it to right where I punched it, and then yeah, that was it, like one total accident of a song. Like, I don't even know what the other song was. We never recorded the other
every
one.
Time I heard that, I was like, oh, Devin, like, I just thought he intentionally went to make that type of record.
That shit was, he was just in there, like I said, the mic had some kind of effect on it, he thought just it sounded like it. An alien, so he just started like, yeah, he, I have a lot of songs of just random shit of Dev. Like, Dev is funny as fuck, man. Like,
no, he is funny. And Dev is one of the people that, when I met Devin, I was like, nah, he's exactly who I thought he was gonna be.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Yeah, he's the dude for real. Like, coolest dude ever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Dev is super cool, man.
Hell yeah. Well, man, shit, what else you got going on, man?
Shit, man, slow boogie on my end, man.
Just kicking it. You don't have any desires to like put together projects or anything like that, or do,
man,
records?
Yeah, you know what? I really love to do another Dude album. Like, we always talked about like Steal That Dude or some shit. I'd like to do another record with Dev. Like, that'll be fun. Hmm.
So where y'all, I mean, where y'all at with that, man? Shit, I love to hear.
Shit, I gotta call him, man. See what he's doing.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I was gonna say. You produced that Ain't No Telling Where I Might Be. I got places to go and people to see. That's my shit.
I love Banner, man.
Banner, yeah. Shout out David
Banner. Banner's one person, man. I'll say this, like, I've been doing this shit a long time, man. And you know what I'm saying? You go through shit and sometimes you'll get jaded by the industry, you know what I'm saying? And he's always been one to call me, man, and be like, man, come on, give me something. Like, do something. Like, come on. Like, he always, you know what I'm saying?
Still keep you like, in the game, yeah.
Yeah, like, he like, man, we need you, bro. Like, you too dope. Like, come on, fuck with me. Like,
that's dope as fuck, yeah, man.
I fuck with Banner, man. I love Banner.
So that wasn't a record you had for Devin. That was strictly Banner and Devin and Bun just happened to be on it.
Yeah, like, he came. Well, see, this is what it was. He came in and, he was like, man, he really wanted a song with Face. And I ain't never asked Face to do shit ever. Cause I know how he is, you know what I'm saying? So this is the one time I was like, man, Face Banner got a record, woo, woo, woo. Me and Uncle Eddie did the beat, Face's uncle. Me and Eddie did the beat, like Banner, like, he want this song. Face was like, yeah, I'll do it. So Banner done flew out here. He got to turn the record in tonight. You know what I'm saying? He done flew out here. We done did everything we could do. We done mixed this song to where all we need is his verse. Calling Face. He ain't answering the phone. I'm like, man. Like, bro, you ain't finna do me like this. We went over to his house and shit. He lived off of Eldridge at the time. And they had like the guard gate and shit. I was like, man, call the house. And he ain't answering the phone. Call him. So Rhonda, his wife, answered the phone. Rhonda got on the phone. Like, Rhonda, wake him up. He got to do this shit. So luckily, he had a dope-ass studio in the crib. So he got up, motherfucking box of drawers on, and wrote that motherfucker, laid it, and went back to bed. But he wrote some shit. It's on that same album.
Yeah, I know you're talking about.
Yeah, he did a hell of a verse on that motherfucker.
No shit, man. That's what's up, man. I don't know, man. I'm thinking about this Steal the Dude album, man. I would love to hear that, man.
Me too, man. I think the last record Dev just did, he did it with Rob. I think him and Rob shit was did jamming. The whole thing. Yeah, he had some jams on that shit.
Yeah, that shit was jamming. Maybe you and Rob. And
I fuck with Rob tough, man. Yeah. Hell yeah, I fuck with Rob.
Yeah. You got to do some more beats, man. You know what I mean? Like, you got to. This is my own personal little wish. Well,
this is my thing. I got to get my setup back together because how it worked back then versus how I would do shit now. Like, I had keyboards everywhere and just, we had space and all kind of shit, you know what I'm saying? But now everything is kind of internalized within these computers and shit.
You get you a Mac and some good VST.
I redone my DJ setup. I just need to get, my beat setup back together. But yeah, I got ideas all day.
Tons
of ideas. Like, I'm ready to do some shit. It's just, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for the wind to blow that way.
Yeah, I feel that. Hell yeah. Well, man, I appreciate you coming through, man.
Yeah, all the time, man. Anytime.
For sure.
I appreciate you, man. Like, you really, you got something going with this here, bro. The way you document this history of what we got here, like, that shit is big. That shit, man, you know, that means a lot, for sure.
I appreciate it. I mean, this shit
stand up forever. Like, you know what I'm saying? You can hear people talk about shit. But to hear from the horse's mouth, like, yeah, you got something to say here, man.
Man, I appreciate it, man. Like, it's just an honor. Like I say, I've been fans of all y'all my whole life. You know what I mean? Hell so yeah. Sit down and do this, man. I appreciate it, man.
All the time, man.
Already. Well, hey, man, it's the Donnie Houston Podcast, DJ Damo. Hey, man, we up out here.
Already.